Welcome to A Well Cared For Human, the podcast that tries to convince you that you are 100% normal and an even better than okay example of the human species, despite the fact that sometimes we feel like the craziest, most incapable, or worthless creatures on the face of this planet. I'm Corey, an author, a creative, and the host of the show. Whatever you're bringing to the table today, I hope this episode proves to be a dose of inspiration for you on your quest to become a well-cared-for human. You can find the episode show notes, your free wellness blueprint, and more at awellcaredforhuman.com. And as always, thank you for listening. Hello, humans, it's your host, Corey, and today we're going to talk about helplessness. This is a requested topic from someone who wrote and asked, how do you cope when someone you love more than anything in the world is suffering and you cannot seem to help? And this reminded me of a very similar question that I just got last week after my keynote presentation. A young woman walked up to me and asked, how do I initiate the conversation about wellness at the office with my fellow physical therapists? And I think both questions are in the same neighborhood, even though one is clearly more difficult than the other. There are more feelings, more emotions involved, probably. In the case of the office mates, you can try to initiate the conversation in a meeting or via a shared thread, like if you guys are on a chat or something together, or on an email chain together. And you would just start it pretty innocently, like, I've been reading a lot about burnout in our industry, and I just wanted to check in with everyone. How are we feeling? Should we do any actions? And that's how I would do it. I would just start with a very direct, warm communication if it was in a more formal setting like an office. But when you do that, it's very possible that you're going to get a vague response because it is a more formal setting. Maybe people don't feel like opening up or sharing their problems. So you may run into, I'm fine, or everything's good here, nothing to worry about. And that's assuming, of course, that you get a response at all, depending on how close you guys are at your office. And that kind of dismissal or rejection can also cause a sense of helplessness, because you might notice that this person is not fine at all during work. You know, you're working with them and it's clear that they're getting irritated or that they're having a rough day. And so they can tell you, oh, I'm fine, don't worry about it, all day long. But if that's not what you're saying, it can leave you in this in-between place of knowing that you want to actively change something, but also not being able to do anything in the moment, not being able to take it any further. And then on the more personal front, there's the situation of there's someone you really love and you know that they're hurting, maybe they're even hurting themselves, and you can't really do anything about it. Either because they're not open to assistance, they just don't want your help, which is also very painful, or because there's nothing really that can be done. For example, I had a friend recently who was very sick. She had a cancer diagnosis, and there's just nothing I could really do about that. I could tell her, you know, how much she means to me, and I can be there for her, even though we live pretty far apart. But there was nothing I could do about the actual illness itself. It just had to run its course. And so all of these scenarios, all of these different versions, I would place under the description of helplessness. Obviously, some situations are more intense than others, but each of these triggers that sense of wanting to act but not being able to or allowed to. So I want to look at each of these versions a little bit more closely, again, from the more distant version, like it's a formal relationship, to the more personal, which is harder, in my personal opinion, because you've got more emotional investment maybe in that relationship. So if you did want to try to have a conversation with someone about their wellness, if you at least wanted to introduce the idea to them, this is how I would go about it. First of all, be very mindful about the language that you use. And this is probably the most important part of the conversation. Because if you try to initiate a conversation about wellness and it comes across as judgmental or condescending, it's very likely that they will shut down the conversation rather than be open to hearing your ideas. And it's very easy to come across as preachy when talking about wellness, let me tell you. It doesn't matter how well-intentioned I can be, I can still say things that may land wrong for certain people. And that's something I always have to be mindful of. So when I'm talking about wellness, I try to use language that keeps me in a very specific position, a very specific place when I talk about it. And my unspoken rules, I guess, for talking about wellness is that I must always keep in my mind that there is never one way to be well, that my approach is not going to be suitable for everybody. And I need to be 100% clear on that when I talk to someone. I need to be 100% clear that I'm just sharing one possibility. I'm not sharing the possibility, the one thing that they have to do. I need to also be 100% clear on what my motives are for helping people. So even when I just get in this booth and I talk to you guys about different topics, sometimes it's something you've requested or something that I just had an idea on that I saw someone else struggling with, I need to be very clear about why I'm trying to share this information. Am I doing it from a place of people need to get it together, which is a very judgmental place, or am I doing it from a place of I really care about people who are suffering and I remember very clearly how hard it was to suffer and I want to be of help and service to those people. So even just having a mindset before you start even talking about it, knowing very clearly why you're doing it, why are you even bringing it up to begin with? Because again, it's very easy to come across as preachy. And I'm not saying that you're like this. Absolutely not. I'm just trying to highlight the fact that even when our intentions are at their best, the words that we use can land poorly. Because we all know that one person who pretends to really care about us, but they are really just criticizing us when they bring up healthy habits. For example, when I was a little bit heavier, my father, of all people, used to make comments like, oh, I'm just worried about you getting too fat, or I'm just worried about you gaining too much weight. But really, he just wanted to criticize my body, right? Because I wasn't actually fat. He just wanted to use that as an excuse to criticize my body. And there are people who do that. They hide behind this facade of concern when they talk to you about not just your parents, but maybe other things that they agree or don't agree with. So just be mindful that wellness is a tricky one. And because wellness is tricky when we want to talk to others about it, it really needs to come from a place of love and respect and equality. Definitely not, I'm doing better than you, let me tell you how to shape up, but I'm absolutely here with you and I care so much, what can I do to help you? So just make sure that that position is absolutely clear in the words that you choose. I also try to empower the person to take control of their wellness because, again, it shouldn't be me telling them what to do to be better. True wellness is meant to be empowering. It's meant to be something that allows people to help themselves, not something that someone else is going to do for them. Unless we have children that we're trying to raise or that we're trying to support until they get to adulthood, we're not supposed to be managing the wellness of other people. We can support them and we can facilitate that and we can do what we can to make that work easier for them, but the ball always has to be in their court. And so I just try to set that tone when I am talking to people or working with someone. I try to make my role in their wellness very clear, which is I'm just here to be a loving and kind voice to you in a world full of critical and judgmental voices, that I am 100% behind you. I absolutely know that you can do this work. And then I offer everything that I can to make that work as easy as possible. But then after that, it's up to you. It's up to whomever might be listening to make the changes that they feel they can make or that they're ready to make. And so when I'm talking to someone about wellness, particularly if we're talking about their wellness, I just try to be as open-hearted as possible. I try to say, look, I love you so much and I care about you so much. And it looks like to me that you're struggling. And if you're not struggling, feel free to tell me otherwise. But it looks like you're having a hard time. And so what can I do to help you? What can I do to be of service to you? Because I don't want to see X, Y, or Z happen. You know, I don't want to see you struggle in these ways. And sometimes boundaries are really necessary depending on how personal this relationship is, how close you are to this person. It's very tempting to throw away your own boundaries when you're offering to be a helper for other people. Sometimes if we're trying to help someone who's in a really bad place, they may ask something of us that's not in the best interest of our own well-being. And I ran into this a lot with my mother. So many of the times that I tried to help my mom when I was trying to offer her a place to live or some kind of support, she really just wanted money from me. But I didn't have the money to give her. I was already in debt. I was already strapped myself. And so sometimes what you're offering is not what they want. And that doesn't mean that you should throw away your own wellness just to help that person. Because if it's going to hurt you physically, emotionally, or financially to help that person, it's more important that you say no, that you protect yourself. And I absolutely know that that's hard and it feels terrible. But retracting from your own well-being is just going to leave you both in the deficit. It's not going to actually help them. It's not going to heal them. It's not going to pull them out of it. You're just going to go down with them. The gravity of their situation is too great. If they're asking for things of you that will hurt you, then that means that their situation is too heavy, so to speak. And so if you grab onto that, you're just going to go down with them. And so what I try to do to prevent that is that I give very clear examples of things that I'm willing to do whenever I make the offer. So let's say the conversation is like, it seems like you're having a really hard time, but I love you so much and I would really love to help you in some way. If you need someone to, and then insert the examples, like if you need someone to drive you to the doctor, I'd absolutely do that. If you need someone to go with you to check into the rehab, you can do that. If you need someone to do X, Y, and Z, specifically state what you are willing and will not do, and make sure that whatever it is you're agreeing to or whatever it is that you're offering, that that still is in the parameters of your own well-being. Also, you could try to keep it open, such as, these are the things that I think might be really helpful to you and I'd be absolutely willing to do that, but what do you think you need right now? Like, what do you feel like you need most? And it might surprise you. It might not be a selfish request at all. Again, I'm thinking of situations like addiction or alcoholism, some of these more toxic situations with my mother where the things that she asked for were really dangerous for me to comply with, and so I couldn't do it. But it might not be that serious for you. It might just simply be something more basic. And so you ask them, you know, what is it that you think they need? And if they say, I would really need someone to help me do this, if someone could just come over and help me clean my house once a week, or even the negotiation, actually, the cleaning example is a good one for a negotiation point. So let's say that you even wanted to initiate the conversation because it looked like maybe they were struggling in their daily tasks. Maybe when you went over, you saw that things were getting messier and dirtier and they were having a harder time kind of keeping up with things. And this happens for so many reasons, right? This just could be an overwhelmed situation. There's too many things going on, or it could be a health situation or a mobility situation. Doesn't matter, but you notice something in the external environment that gives you a heads up that, something might be going on. And so you ask them, you're like, hey, it looks like you're really struggling. Is there something I can do? And they're like, I just wish I had someone to clean my house. Now, if that doesn't feel good to you, like if that feels like a red flag, like, oh my gosh, if I clean this house for her once, she's gonna expect me to keep doing it forever and ever. Like if it feels like it's that kind of relationship and that's a risk, you could negotiate and be like, well, I can't clean the whole house, but you know, I can come over for 2 hours on Friday. Let's just plan on cleaning it together then, and set those parameters for what you will do, and then show up at that time and do what you can. And then when you're done, you know, walk away from it. So there's also negotiation that's possible in these wellness situations where you, again, can keep your needs in the picture. You can do what you can to offer that support, show that you're there, show that you care, but also not put your own well-being at risk while you're doing it. And so those are some ideas for how you might be able to initiate the conversation either very directly and openly in kind of a work environment, or very heartfelt and vulnerable in a personal relationship, offered help, but keep your boundaries in place when you do it. These are all great first steps, but the reality is that sometimes when you put yourself out there and you've made it clear in the most loving or affirming way possible that you're here for them and you're willing to help, they just don't accept your help, or they close down the conversation, or what they want is something that you can't give them without hurting yourself, and hopefully you won't do that. And so this is where the helplessness usually gets amplified, when we want to help, but we can't, or we try to help, but it doesn't go forward. There's something that ends the situation. And it's terrible. I mean, I'll just be honest with you. It's an awful feeling. I never once have enjoyed feeling helpless. And I felt helplessness a lot as a kid, you know, seeing my mother suffer and go through all the things that she went through, and me just wanting her to be healthy, happy, and well. But me just being a little kid, you know, what can I do? I couldn't do anything as a 5, 6, 7, 8 year old, or even as a teenager. And so helplessness was something that I dealt with a lot. And what it taught me was how to be very accepting of people and of situations, and how to be present and loving with someone even though there was nothing I could physically do to shift the situation. Because that's what helplessness refers to. It refers to this situation of feeling powerlessness, of feeling like I have no control, of feeling that there is no way I can change the situation or the person. And this happens in our personal relationships. It happens in even political landscapes. Maybe you don't even like what politicians are doing with your life, the decisions they're making on, quote, your behalf. So helplessness is in all areas of our life. It doesn't have to just be personal or professional. It's everywhere. And so it's really important that we figure out how to work with that terrible feeling when it comes up. Because when we don't manage our helplessness, it leads to us feeling emotionally distressed, really upset, frustrated, or it leaves us feeling trapped or overwhelmed. It can shut us down. It can make us stop investing in our own well-being. So it's very important that we acknowledge helplessness when it comes up, and we do what we can to mitigate any damaging effects that it might have on our own well-being. And so let's talk about what to do with that. So let's say you recognize, I feel really helpless about that. And so that's the first step, is just to recognize that what you're experiencing is helplessness. You don't want the situation to be like that, but you can't change it. And if that's the case, what you're experiencing in that moment is helplessness. So first step, acknowledgement, awareness that that's what's going on, that, okay, this is helplessness. And then second, doing what you can to not judge it. So one of the terrible things that I used to do to myself when I was feeling helpless is that I would give myself a really hard time about it. I'd be like, I'm helpless because I'm too weak, because I'm too dumb to come up with a good solution. I'm not creative enough to solve this. I usually took it and turned it against myself. Like, I wouldn't feel helpless if I could just figure this out. I wouldn't feel helpless if I could just change this. And so I gave myself a really hard time about feeling powerless and being out of options. But that doesn't make any sense, because we are just ants. We're just ants on a rock that's hurling through space. Like, of course there are things that we can't change. Of course there are things that we can't do. And it doesn't mean that I'm a weak, useless person just because I have no effect on certain situations, or I can't get certain outcomes in certain situations. It doesn't mean anything. So don't use your powerlessness as a weapon against yourself. Don't turn it in on yourself when you start to feel helpless and use that to beat yourself up. That's the worst thing that you can do for yourself in these situations, because there's nothing wrong with you just because you feel helpless. It does not mean that there's anything wrong with you or that you're deficient in any way. It's just a natural emotion to a difficult situation. I often also found it very helpful to think about what the triggers were for my helplessness. So just to understand what was making me feel helpless exactly, that was a lot of unpacking of my history and of my past. Because even as an adult, when I grew up and I got away from my family situation, when I moved on from my family, so to speak, sometimes these situations would occur in my daily life, and I would suddenly have a crushing sense of helplessness, and it didn't really match the situation. Like, this was really intense helplessness for this, let's say, level one problem. Like, it wasn't a big deal, this one thing that I couldn't change now in my adult life. So for a long time, I didn't realize, oh, you know, actually, this is some residual helplessness from the past. I'm really sensitive to the feeling of helplessness because of how much I experienced it in the past. And so it's very possible that right now in your adult life, you're experiencing helplessness more intensely if you were really conditioned or exposed to it in some past experience, either childhood or just even earlier in your adult life. Maybe you had a terrible relationship, or maybe you had to watch someone you love suffer. So it might also be required that you acknowledge the role that your past is playing in your present experience. Like, oh yeah, my helplessness is really getting triggered, and it's getting triggered in these ways. So this reflection, you know, I'm going to say journaling. You can say journaling, or a therapist, or, you know, a good friend, or someone, like, talking it through, just kind of trying to understand yourself and why you feel the way you feel in certain situations. Like, oh, you know, I felt really sensitive to this helpless trigger today, even though the situation itself wasn't that serious. It was just, you know, a little bit of helplessness. It felt so intense because it reminded me of this past experience that I had before. So just understanding that more can help you to be more patient when it comes up, to help you be more loving and kind to yourself when it comes up, and be like, ah, yeah, you know, I understand why I felt helpless like this today, but there's no need to make it worse for myself or to build it up in my mind. Everyone feels this way. Everyone feels helpless sometimes, and it doesn't mean that I'm a terrible person or that I'm weak or awful in any way. It's just something that came up, and I can sit with this. I can be patient with this, and it will pass. I have not felt helpless every minute of my life forever and ever, and this emotion itself will weaken if I'm just patient enough with it. I also, again, I mentioned therapy just a second ago, but I did seek a lot of support from other people, you know, just kind of expressing how difficult it was for me to feel helplessness in regards to my mother, or helplessness in regards to certain situations, and having them be a loving soundboard, like, yes, absolutely, that was really difficult. That helped me to get out of my head as well, because again, when we stay just in our thoughts and our emotions, we don't always see the situation clearly. We can be really hard on ourselves about it. We can be like, oh, no, really, I should have figured this out, or oh my gosh, why can't I get this to change? Or depending on how stubborn you are, if you're really stubborn like me, you might really be trying to get in there and fix it. And so just having that greater awareness, and then allowing other people to support you in those difficult moments and sitting with that pain, that can be really helpful as well to alleviate some of that pressure. I also like to just focus on the things that I can control. So I knew that I couldn't save my mom, right? I knew that I couldn't fix my mom's situation. And that was really sad, of course, and that was really hurtful. But I knew that I could save me, and I knew that I could take care of me. And so I used all that energy and desperation to change something, and I channeled it toward myself. And that's the best thing that you can do, is to look at the things in your life that you don't like that you can fix. Because surely there's something in your life that you don't like that you can change, that you can work on. And every time that you encounter that feeling of helplessness, just go work on that other thing. Just go work on that other thing until you have the positive benefits of that change. And just don't dwell too much on the things that you can't change. Focus instead on the things that you can and redirect that energy. And that's just a skill. That's just practice. It doesn't always feel instinctual to redirect the energy or redirect the attention like that. That requires practice. But again, just keep doing it. Every time you realize you're really fixating on that thing that makes you feel helpless, turn your attention to the one thing that you can change. And maybe even make it easier on yourself by having a list of things in my life that I could change right now that I really do want to change. And every time you catch yourself feeling helplessness, go to your list and be like, okay, which of these things am I going to work on right now instead of thinking about this? And just keep redirecting yourself again and again and again until you break that habit of focusing too much on the helplessness. But I totally get it. I get why you do it, because especially if there's someone that you love that's involved, like, you don't want to think about or see them suffering. And so how can you not look back, or how can you not look over there and see what's happening? But it's really just not the best use of your time, as hard as that may be to hear. And so if anything you can do to take that back for yourself is going to be more beneficial to you and more useful to your own well-being. I also just kind of worked on developing different coping strategies that were more helpful. So part of my helplessness was deeply connected to the codependency that I had learned as a child with a parent who was struggling with alcohol use and drug use. So if you have codependency issues, you might also really be struggling with helplessness. Codependency is a whole thing. There's whole fields of studies. I would encourage you to read the book by Melody Beatty called Codependent No More. And Codependent No More was really good at kind of showing me this cycle that we get into when we're trying to save people that can't be saved. And so it creates codependency. It creates this, let's call it, tapestry or network of poor coping mechanisms or poor coping strategies, things that we do that are not great for ourselves. And so slowly I had to replace them one by one. And that could be anything such as mindfulness or learning how to relax in my body or meditate or relax my mind or exercise or do something that brought me joy or fulfilled me, and using my creativity to give people power. I mean, there's no mystery here as to why all of my characters... I mean, pick up any book, go to the bookstore or go to the library or go online and find a Corey M. Shrum book. And what you're going to find when you pluck it is that there's someone in there who was feeling helpless and then they gain their power back. Like, that's a whole trope. And so I totally get it. This sense of this progression from a sense of powerlessness to gaining your power back. And I used creativity to explore that. I used creativity to help me retell myself these stories to feel less powerless, to feel less helpless. And so you can do that for yourself as well. So maybe it might require that you look at those coping strategies that you're using now and asking yourself if maybe there's any of those that you need to replace with better coping strategies. And if you just do a quick search, like an internet search of negative coping strategies or codependent coping strategies, you'll get a list of strategies that you may or may not be doing that you could break yourself of as well. So I definitely encourage you to look into that if you think that codependency might be an issue. But anything you can do to take action, to lean into the experience, keep you in that space of empowerment rather than feeling like you're the victim, that you're being held hostage by someone else's poor decisions or the way someone else is hurting themselves, or even just fate. Again, with my friend who was super sick and I couldn't do anything about it, you know, just feeling like life is getting you down. Instead of focusing on that, focus on what can be done. Challenge those negative thoughts. Again, it brings up a lot of negative thoughts. So anything you can do to make sure that those are not catastrophized or built up in your mind, you're not dwelling in them, just move beyond that. And above all, I try to remember two things. First and foremost, that anytime I connect with helplessness, I connect with what it is to be human. Helplessness is nothing new. I am not the first person in the history of mankind who has felt helpless, and I will not be the last. And there are so many people out there in the world right now, just like me, just like you, who are experiencing this helplessness. And so I try to keep that in mind, that it's a very human experience, and that it doesn't mean any of these terrible things like I'm too weak or I can't change anything, I'm useless, I'm powerless. None of that's true. This is just a very human experience. And I can use that to help me feel more compassionate for other people, to help feel more loving and kind toward other people, to be more compassionate and loving toward myself, and be more gentle with myself when I'm feeling this way. And even more than that is helplessness is still so much better than the alternative. The alternative to helplessness is giving up. The alternative to helplessness is a closed heart. When we feel helpless, it's because we love someone or we care about something and we want to change it, but we can't. A lot of people, I'm thinking specifically of my father, their reaction to that sense of helplessness was to close their heart completely to their experiences. And I would not choose that path for myself at all. To live with a closed heart, I can see what that does to a person. It cuts you off from your joy. It cuts you off from your freedom. It cuts you off from that beauty and tenderness of life. And so helplessness, does it suck? Absolutely. But the alternative is so much worse, which is to live from that closed-hearted place where you can't connect with all the beautiful things in your life as well. So for me, I also just try to keep in mind that helplessness, that is still a far better price to pay than the alternative. Because that sense of helplessness, all that means is that you love, that you care, and that you're still here. You're still alive. And that's it for today, dear human. As always, I hope you found this episode useful. And if you would like to write into the show today and ask me for my thoughts on something that you're dealing with, I would love to hear from you through any of my social media or through email, corey@coreyamsham.com. Otherwise, I will be back next week with another episode of A Well-Cared-For Human. And until then, please take good care of you. This episode of A Well-Cared-For Human was written and produced by me, Corey Marie. The music was by Late Night Feeler and Esther Abrami. If you like what I'm doing here, please consider visiting my Patreon. For as little as $1 a month, you get early ad-free access to the episodes, as well as a monthly patrons-only Q&A, bonus videos, and more. Not to mention that your Patreon support lets me know that you find value in the show and want it to continue. You can find me on Patreon by visiting www.patreon.com/CoreyMarie. If you can't support the show financially, that is okay. You can still subscribe to the show, leave a review of the show, and recommend the show to your friends, not just the neurotic ones. All of this helps so much. And as always, thank you for listening.